Hey, thank you so much for joining us today on From Start to Finish podcast with Christina Faith. I am your host, Christina Faith, where we inspire people to live authentically and start and finish their dreams. Thank you so much for listening and enjoy the show. Hey, how you guys doing? Welcome to day two from start to finish with Christina Faith. We have an amazing podcast planned for you today. Today we have the one and only Jeff Goins. He has an amazing website. He is a full-time writer, entrepreneur, husband, and just an all-around good guy that is willing to help you discover your call. Jeff, how are you doing today?
I'm doing great, Christina. Thanks for having me.
It is a pleasure. I have been reading your things for a while now, and I just wanted to expose people to someone who's taken their desire and turned it into an actual thing that they have started and finished and are continuing to work on. So some people may not know how you got started, but can you tell us a little bit of your background?
Sure. Yeah. I worked for a nonprofit for about 7 years, and I was the marketing director there. Nonprofit was called Adventures and Missions, and during that time, I realized that what I really wanted to be doing was writing. And so, I had a conversation with a friend of mine around that time, and he asked me what my dream was. And I kind of hemmed and hawed, and he kind of pulled it out of me that, I wanted to be a writer someday. And he said, "Jeff, you don't have to want to be a writer. You are a writer. You just need to write." And as soon as he said that, something resonated in me. Something made me realize, yeah, this is who I am. And because this is who I am, this is what I need to go out and do. And so the next day I started writing at 5 a.m. And the next day after that, I woke up again the next morning and started writing for a couple of hours. And every morning I did this, but almost without fail for an entire year. I ended up starting a blog. I tried to talk about a lot of different things, but what I ended up talking about a lot was writing, creativity, and this process of how I pursued my dream, which eventually turned into this opportunity to publish a book, start a business, and then be able to quit my job. And it took about 2 years, and I've been doing it for 2 years now. So the whole journey took, about 4 years now. And looking back on that, I realize I couldn't have planned any of this, but it's a lot of fun. I mean, I get up every day and I get to write on my blog and share words with the world and try to help people discover what they're supposed to do. And I end up talking to a lot of writers and creatives and aspiring entrepreneurs about, how they can take their dreams and turn them into reality.
Nice. So can you tell us what were some of your hangups of not wanting to pursue writing full time? What were some of your fears?
My biggest fear, I think, was fear of success, not failure. I had been well acquainted with failure, so I wasn't afraid of it. I'd been trying to write professionally for years and never really had taken it that seriously. So when it didn't happen, I never really got my hopes up. So, wasn't that disappointed. When I committed, when I started calling myself a writer, there was a fear that I had right before I did that and all throughout the way where I was worried that what happens if I succeed? What will be expected of me? What will I be responsible for? And the fear of actually having to take this seriously and do the work and not being able to go, I didn't really care about that. That fear held me back for a long time. And I ended up just having to face the fear by acknowleding what will be worse. Will it be worse for me to try this and fail or succeed at this and it be, bigger than I can handle? Or will it be worse to not try? And so I realized, as my friend whom I write about in the book, The Art of Work, Jody Nolan realized, which is that the bigger fear pushes out the lesser fear. And the lesser fear is, what if I fail? Or what if, this is more work than I realized? The bigger fear is, what if I don't do this? What if I actually don't try? And when I started fearing not trying, I wasn't so concerned with failing or even succeeding.
Here's your man, Ty Tribbett. Nobody. Nobody greater!
Yeah! How many of y'all know that God is greater than anything? Let's go! Everybody come on! Everybody come on! Everybody come on! Let's go! Everybody come on! Everybody.
is a heart fixer.
Heart fixer, heart fixer. He is a heart fixer.
Mind regulator. He's a mind regulator.
Mind regulator. He's a mind regulator.
Healer, healer. He is my healer.
Healer, healer.
Yeah.
He is a healer.
Provider, provider. He's my provider.
Come about? Like, you went from talking about, you know, establishing who you are, knowing that you're a writer, helping other people with their personal experiences, but then you kind of like shifted with the book to calling. How did that come about?
Yeah, it was sort of an accidental process. I wrote in the book that the way this book came together was a surprise, which is appropriate because I think that's true for your calling. Everybody that I interviewed in the book is full of different stories from people who have found meaningful work and are doing it. People like Walt Disney and Mother Teresa, and also, you know, people like I mentioned, Jody Nolan and Jenny Pong and Matt McWilliams. These people whose names you've probably never heard of before, but have these really incredible stories about how they discovered what they were meant to do. For all of them, it was a surprise. It did not work out the way that they thought it would, and there was something really beautiful in that discovery. The same thing was true for me when I started interviewing people. I was sort of surprised by what I heard, but it resonated with my experience. I was like, oh, that's, we had to interview somebody and go, oh, that's true about me. And then I'd interview somebody else and I'd go, yeah, that's true too. So the way I wrote the book was probably not the way that I would recommend writing a book, but I ended up saying, okay, here's what I think is true. You know, here's all my great ideas. And then I read it. I was like, I don't like that book. I don't think that's necessarily true. You know, it was sort of a typical guru how to, you know, kind of book. And I was like, I don't know that the world needs another one of those books. So I went out on this, you know, journey of trying to find people who were doing meaningful work, interviewing them, and then telling their stories. And as I started interviewing them, I suspended my motives and my agenda, and I just wanted to learn. And as I heard their stories and listened and learned, I started to see threads, and I started to see the same threads in my own life. I was like, oh, yeah, that resonates with me. That I experienced that same thing. And in other people's stories, I started to see my own story. So when I sat down to write the book, or rather rewrite the book, I wanted to evoke that in the reader. Like, I wanted them to read other people's stories and for that to help them make sense of their own stories. And that's kind of how you got the structure of the book that it is today.
So when you first started sitting down with these interviews, because the interviews are so key to the book, it's like, wow, they pull you in and they make you realize, like, either, you know, from someone who has cancer and they're helping their child through a marathon, you're like, wow, like, you can take anything, any obstacle, and make it an amazing possibility, and then discover your calling through it. When you were listening to those stories, what were some of the things going through your own mind as far as seeing the threads? What threads did you specifically see that we can discover in the book?
Yeah, I mean, you mentioned the first one, Christina. Everybody had some sort of difficulty or pain, something that didn't make sense, that in some ways felt like a setback and ended up being a necessary step in the process. And it, I mean, that taught me that, you know, maybe our difficulties are our greatest opportunities. Viktor Frankl talks about how in order for you to have a meaningful life, one of the things that you have to be able to do is redeem your pain or your suffering. You have to stop going, what if, or what could have been, and accept what is and make the most of it. So, you know, that was one of the common things is, you know, the path was always surprising. Another thing that was really common that surprised me was none of these people knew what they were supposed to do. I think this is a myth that we hear, particularly, you know, from successful people. They just knew, like they just knew at 3 years old, you know, they were going to go be a fireman or a plumber or an author or a dancer. And I think there are clues. I mean, everybody said, yeah, like when I listened to my life, when I paid attention to what it was trying to tell me, I learned things about myself that I guess had always been true, but I didn't always know. I had to discover it. And then I think another thing that I learned was that there was never just this clear epiphany where they knew exactly what to do. We think about this idea of calling or discovering your purpose. Like at a certain moment, you wake up and you discover what you're meant to do. And I realized that discovery is really a dedicated process. It comes with dedication as you take steps. Clarity comes, you know, with action. It's not something that you get some sudden realization and then go do it. Really, you go do it, and then you realize things along the way.
Here's Josh Garls with Colors. His new album, Home, is actually free, but you can purchase it as well. Go ahead and Google his name.
Shoulders, child, breathe in. Carry the weight of love you've been given. Storm is passing by, light breaks in. As you learn to sing. Woven into a wave of beautiful sound. Open the heavenlies and shake the ground and change the world. So let all the creatures sing.
Clarity comes with action. That kind of like leads me back to, you know, the purpose of the show was really to inspire people to start and finish. And you did something that was very different and challenged the status quo with the marketing of your book. You gave it away. How did what sparked that? What clarity brought you to see that, wow, let's approach this from a different angle?
So somebody once asked Mother Teresa, if they could pray for her to have clarity. And she refused to do it. And the man said, well, come on, you're Mother Teresa. You have clarity. Why don't you give some of that to me? I'm paraphrasing here. and she says, oh, no, I have never had clarity. I've only ever had trust. So I will pray that you have trust. I did not have clarity. I had no idea. I just thought I wanted this message to spread. I knew that there were people out there that didn't know who I was, and asking them to, you know, buy a $17 book, you know, might limit the amount of people I could reach. And I wanted to reach a lot of people with this book. I wanted to do some big things with it. And so I figured out a way to, you know, make it work where we could give away copies to people if they paid shipping and handling to help cover some of the costs and the expenses of getting the books out there. And just, you know, see if that in and of itself would catch more people's attention, which it did. And, you know, for me, writing books, because I have a business and because I have other ways of making an income, writing books has never been about making money for me. It's always been about helping messages spread. And I think whenever you can be generous, that's going to help an idea or a message spread farther.
Nice. So generosity is a big key for you, even with the bonuses that you've given away. And it really helps you to embody the book a bit more. So from a business standpoint, how did you, if you can give us a, because I know you do courses and things on this as well, how do you spread your message? Why is giving so important to your message? Because you give away PDFs, you give away, you know, webinars, you gave away your book, and you're a business. So how does that help you? Does that help you in the long run? Of course it does. Well, how?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I think advertising is dead. Traditional marketing is nearly dead. So how do you get people's attention? You can't interrupt them anymore. And if you do interrupt them, if you're going to interrupt them to ask them to pay for something, it's not going to go well for you. Nobody wants to be interrupted to buy something that they don't think they need. So what are the messages? What are the organizations and businesses that are winning doing? Well, they're being generous. They're finding ways to earn somebody's attention through giving them something. You don't have to give away the farm. You don't have to give away everything, but you do have to give something. I love giving the example of every time I'm walking through the courtyard in the mall, I'm not interested in sitting down and eating food in the courtyard. I'm trying to go return. Usually, I'm trying to return a pair of pants that didn't fit, or you know, pick something up for my wife or something. I'm on a mission, and I don't like being at the mall. And I'm trying to get in and get out as quickly as possible. But you have to walk through the courtyard when you enter the mall through the entrance that I go through, and you have to walk all the way. You can't walk through it. You have to walk around, walking past every restaurant. And as you walk past every restaurant, the smart vendors are standing out front of the restaurants, giving away free samples of their food. Why are they doing that? Because they understand that people are busy, but they're also hungry. Mm-hmm. And that the best way to get you to pay for, you know, Joe's kebab shack is, you know, it's not taking out a billboard advertisement. It's not buying a TV ad, which is very expensive and very, you know, hard to get people's attention with now, because we're just going to fast forward through it on our TiVo or whatever. So the best way to get your attention is to give you an experience with the product. And so it gives out a free sample. And I walk around and I pick up all those free samples because, you know, that's a small little lunch for me.
Yeah.
But now I know what those things taste like, so that when I'm hungry next time with my family, I can make an informed decision about, you know, what we're going to buy to eat. The same thing's true with whatever service, product, you know, et cetera, that you provide. One of the best way to market it is not to, like, you know, spend a bunch of money on a website, that's fine, or get a bunch of brochures, again, fine. The best way to do it is to somehow give somebody an experience, a small experience with the thing that you offer. This is why, as a writer, I give away my writing on my blog every single day, because it whets the appetite, gives people an idea of what the style is, so that when a book comes out, or when a course comes out, or when something comes out that is going to be another way that they can interact with my content, and they have an opportunity to pay me for it, they know what to expect. And yeah, it does work. And the more I give, the more I get. Yeah, and it's fun to do it that way, which is really why I do it. But it, you know, frankly speaking, it's also profitable.
Yeah, it definitely is. It wasn't hard for me to buy your book. Like, it wasn't hard for me to, you're a writer, so write. It wasn't hard because you had given away so much information that caused me to say, wow, I need to invest in this guy because he's such an investor. We all love Carlos Whitaker. Here is off of his first EP, God of Second Chances. So how does all of this work with you and your family? How do you balance life? And I know that, you know, your business is a lifestyle business. Why is that important for you and your family?
It is, but my wife is quick to remind me that, you know, just because I can work a few hours a week doesn't mean that I always do, because I love what I do. And, you know, I love, you know, being on this call with you right now, you know, when I could be, you know, taking the dog for a walk. That was sort of, we figured out the right rhythm for us, having done this for a couple of years, because I quit my job and I was like, I don't have to work at all. You know, I'll just like I'll do the 4-hour work week thing and it'll be fine. And that made me miserable because, you know, and Tim Ferriss actually talks about this in his book, that once you stop working, you have to find other activities to fill your schedule. Otherwise you're going to lose this sense of purpose. One of the things that I realized is just because I don't have to work all the time, I mean, I do have to work some, doesn't mean that I shouldn't work. Mm-hmm. And I think we have to, you know, go through this paradigm shift where we go, man, I've got to work, you know, I have to work. And we have to transition into, I get to work. This is a privilege. This is a great way for me to take my skills and, you know, share them in a meaningful way that's going to make a difference in the world. So, you know, the way that we do life is we do seasons of busyness and seasons of stillness. And we just went through a very busy season of launching the book where I was working, you know, I was probably working 40 hours a week, which is a lot for me. Mm-hmm. You know, in slower seasons, I work 20 hours a week. But I was, you know, I was working a lot. I was working some, you know, some evenings and early mornings. And we balanced that out with, we're going on vacation in a couple of days and just kind of completely unplug. And then, you know, the next season will be a little bit slower. But for me, I realized, and my wife realized this too, I do have to work. I do have to, you know, sit down and write every day and do something to feel like I'm being productive and I'm doing what I was meant to do. But the other side of it is, you know, because I've done both extremes, not working at all to working myself like a dog. I have to realize, as Stephen King did, he wrote about this in his memoir on writing, that he says that I used to think that life was a support system for art, and now I realize it's the other way around. So I realized that my family is not the support system for the work that I do. The work, in many ways, is a support system for the family. It makes so many other things possible. I find that when I'm not living well, I'm not writing well. Mm-hmm. And when I'm not writing, I'm not living well because I'm frustrated and flustered because I'm not doing the thing that I'm supposed to do. So it's an integrated approach. I don't think in terms of balance as much as these are tensions to be managed. And the best way to manage the tension is to realize my family life is going to influence my writing, and my writing and the work that I do is going to influence my family. And if those are healthy tensions and they're integrated in healthy ways where one respects the other and vice versa, it's good. When it feels competitive instead of complementary, that's when it gets kind of dangerous.
So what does a typical day look like for you? How often do you write? Like how long?
So I don't just write. I mean, you know, mm-hmm. I run a business. I do a lot of different things. And I thought when I quit my job, I would just write all the time. That ended up not being true. I still had to fight for times to write every day. Every day I get up with my son, make breakfast for him. His mom gets to sleep in a little bit. And he and I have breakfast. I make breakfast for him. Then I make breakfast for me, which then becomes second breakfast for him because he eats some of my eggs. And then we usually play. You know, we played lightsabers this morning. We you know, fought each other with Luke Skywalker and Darth Vader. Then I, you know, typically rush off to work, and I usually get my writing done in the morning. When it doesn't get done in the morning, I'll do it in the afternoon. But I just sit down. I try to write usually first thing for about, you know, 30 to 60 minutes and try to get 500 words down. This could be a future blog post. It could be, you know, something for a chapter of a book. But my goal is just to get words down as quickly as possible so that that's done. And then I can edit it. I can tweak it. I can play with other, you know, I can deal with other content as the day progresses. But if I don't do that, if I go through my whole day busy about many things, but I haven't been intentional about the one thing, I don't feel right. I feel like I wasted my whole day. So it's really important to do that first. Then, you know, right now I'm doing a bunch of interviews and things for the book. But typically, you know, typical day is I'll write, I'll kind of check in. I've got, you know, a team of contractors that I work with on various projects. I'll check in with them, see how everything's going. Then I'll, you know, go grab lunch with a friend usually. And then the afternoons, you know, are when I tend to get down to like deep work on projects. That's when I'll work on a book. That's when I'll, you know, if I'm building a course or, you know, creating a bunch of content, that's when I'll try to spend, you know, a few hours in the afternoon really working on something. And then, you know, I'm checking email and doing all that other normal stuff that people do. And usually I'm home before five. Some days I'm home, you know, by three and spending time with my family and hanging out and, you know, go to the park and doing whatever we're going to do. So that's a typical day. It's not that exciting, but it's
I know
it's fun.
The world makes
it
seem like it's so exciting, but it's fun for us. But it's not like the glamour life of, you know, let's take a picture. I'm writing. No, I'm just sitting at the computer writing. So how important is community is so important. First of all, you live in Nashville. Nashville is like it's just Atlanta, Nashville, and some parts of New York are just so community based. How important is community for you? So every day during the week, you try to have lunch with someone. Is that something that you typically try to do?
Yeah. Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah, I would say at least three times a week I'm having lunch with friends or something, you know, or colleagues or, you know, peers. And then every Wednesday I meet with a group of a dozen friends of mine, 11 other friends. There's a men's mastermind group that I meet with, 12 guys. And we meet at 7 o'clock in the morning and we talk about our businesses, our lives. We typically read a book and talk about, you know, how it's applying to us. Then we all go out to breakfast, which typically lasts most of the morning. So from like 7 to noon, I'm spending time with these guys. And sometimes it'll even turn into lunch with them. Mm-hmm. And that day is all, you know, Wednesday is all about meetings. You know, if somebody wants to meet me and they're in town, Wednesday is the best day to do that. I think community is really important. I wrote in The Art of Work, this was kind of a discovery that I made, that nobody got to where they were supposed to go by themselves.
Yeah.
And I realized that every story of success is really a story of community. And as I was learning this about these successful people, I was realizing I'm spending a lot of time in solitude and I need to be spending more time with other people because, you know, as we all, you know, succeed together, then we kind of push each other forward. You know, it's not as competitive as we tend to fear. And it's just fun. It's just more fun to do life with other people, to share your life with other people, which is why I have lunch with people, throughout the week, but I slot out, you know, all of Wednesday morning to spend time with this group of people, my best friends that I'm sharing my life with.
You've seen this guy on The Voice. This is Anthony Evans with No Condemnation.
I'm not afraid to die.
what's your setup like? Like, what is, are you a techie? Are you just a basic minimalist type guy?
Yeah, I'm neither of those things.
Okay. I was talking to Carlos Whitaker and his bag is like ridiculous. It's just full of everything.
Uh-huh. Yeah. He's a great guy. Yeah. My office is really messy right now because it's serving as like three different things: podcast studio, video studio, and writing studio.
Okay.
But yeah, I mean, I've got a MacBook Pro Retina, and I've got a Heil PR40 mic that I'm talking to you on. I do have this Apple display for my computer that I haven't used for like 3 weeks. It's just sitting in the corner of my desk, or in the corner of my office. And then a bunch of books and stuff, you know. So I'm not a super tool oriented guy. I think that people spend a lot of time worrying about, you know, what tool will help me, you know, get to the right place. And I think tools are fine, but I favor techniques over tools.
Okay, so what do you use for writing? What do you use for managing your life and your email and things like that?
I use Byword to write blog posts. I use Evernote to capture ideas, and I use Scrivener to write anything for a book. And that basically follows a system that I use called the three bucket system that goes from idea capturing to drafting, you know, to turning those ideas into kind of, you know, a draft, and then editing those ideas into published pieces. And so that three bucket system is ideas that I capture throughout the day using my iPhone, grabbing, you know, stuff in Evernote, then sending it over to my computer, then sitting down in the morning or evening when I write and taking one of those ideas, you know, out of that bucket and trying to turn it into a draft, and then, you know, setting that aside to edit later. I don't write and edit in the same sitting. And then picking up another draft that I've worked on earlier and, you know, editing that to turn it into a published piece, which then usually ends up in Scrivener for, you know, a book or something. So yeah, and then I use Mail and, you know, all the typical Apple apps. But for me, all that stuff could go away. I just, you know, what matters most is the system for writing.
And my last question for you is, why should we buy your book?
Well, maybe you shouldn't. You know, maybe you've got it all figured out and you know exactly what you're doing with your life and you don't have any questions. And if you, you know, if that's the case, then you probably shouldn't buy the book. You know, it's not for everyone. But if you feel like there's more to your life and you're somehow missing out on it, I think this is a book that helps you figure out what that thing is. And it's an honest book. I mean, I think a lot of books aren't honest. They tell you what you want to hear. They don't tell you what you need to hear. They tell you how, you know, somebody at one point did it to succeed, but not necessarily how you can do it. This is a book full of stories that will likely give you, you know, some insight into your own story. And if you do buy the book and you don't like it, just send me an email and I'll buy it back from you and I'll sell it to somebody else. So, you know, I guess, you know, in that respect, there's not much risk.
There's no risk at all. Yeah.
So, but yeah, I mean, I believe in the book. A lot of people have really enjoyed it so far. Several have told me they've sat down and read it in one sitting, which is, you know, a huge honor. I think that means it's fairly readable. And I feel like I can brag about the book because it's not mine. It's you know, all I did was collect these stories and share these things that I learned. There's some great stories in the book of people that are truly my heroes living incredible lives. And I'd love for you to meet them, if only through, you know, The Art of Work.
Yeah, it's a great book, guys. I have purchased it. I love it. It's definitely encouraging to be able to read other people's stories, because when you read other people's stories, you feel like you matter and you can connect with them, as opposed to feeling like you're distant and you're off and all by yourself. In the book, Jeff says, because in the end, success isn't so much about what you do with your life, it's about what you leave behind. And one of the things that you will discover in The Art of Work is what you're supposed to leave behind. And you'll discover your calling and your purpose. And if you don't fully discover it, you'll begin to get an inkling and begin to look at life a bit differently. So definitely go out and get the book. His podcast is amazing as well, The Portfolio Life. His website, goinswrites.com, is just amazing. Thank you, Jeff, for joining us today.
Thank you, Christina. It was a pleasure.
Man, I hope you guys are enjoying the show. This is episode 17. Here is Miss Jackie Hill Perry with Odeita Lauren. Also, if you want to book Jacqui Hill or book her husband, you can go to humblebeast.com. They are now booking together or separately. So this album is just great. Thank you all for joining the show today. Have a great day.
First time I saw you, I was with my cousin, he was buzzing. He had a baby mother that didn't trust him. I was 7, he was 20-something with 2 kids. While we was at the store, she popped up with a pistol in the fist. I looked her in the eyes, seen a schizo in the fear. With a mama out of mind, screaming, I'ma come for mine. So I ran to the back with his 2 kids. We both crying, trying to figure out if my cousin dead or alive. Am I the last one to see his eyes? Am I the last one to see his time pass? With the blast of a mother troubled by a mind, sad situation. I'm waiting for somebody to rescue me. The song I seen on TV, it's the refugees playing in my head while I dread watching my cousin get locked like Haile Selassie was a fist. Praise Yahweh, he wasn't dead. Lauren, I ain't know your name back then, but your lyrics kept me kinda sane back when I was in the back thinking, let the track spin. Let the track spin, singing.
La la la. La la, that's the way that we rock when we doing our
Saturday
thing.
Morning, I see you on the TV singing in the split screen. 50s theme with a picture, it's a sister with a crown that isn't made of gold. With skin like mine, that's when my mind froze like the summer's gone. The color wasn't popular, changed me in the winter. Maybe that'll make me lighten up or bright enough or white enough to heighten love. Zion was the track I played out. Educating misses on the mission Adam made out. Be a mother or artist, anime your cakes found. It's at the playground where toys don't take the place of your present. The gift that stay round is merry-go. You killed the Grammys, rest in peace to the very ghost that repeated the parable. The chicks don't put bullets in pencils, even in writings let the let go. The trigger spitting wicked is wicker, is broom flying. No witches, the lyrics only scarecrows. You made them timid, Lauren. Yeah, I knew your name back then, and your lyrics really brought some change back when I was in the back thinking, let the track spin. Let the track spin, singing.
La la la. Ooh la la la. That's the way that we rock on.
It was a minute before we saw your face. You made miseducation, then left the class with another teacher to take your place. Fans waiting patiently, pacing the record places for music that they could play. Without you, we just Drakes. Nothing was the same until Unplugged showed up. Voice broken, but the substance told a story that the drug imitates. It was high, doper than the vanity in the veins. A entertainment's addicts, you radically ravaged the masses with a couple words or two. With action in your language, something verbs would do. But your emotion had me asking if you was alright. You seem kinda different, like in the distance. You might have dealt with some issues, some religion that had scriptures, but with no intentions of giving you Christ, giving you life. I could be tripping, but I'm telling the truth. If a decision's what you made, lyrics can't be the proof. It's something else, it's something bigger than you. It's Jesus. When you was climbing out your box, I hope you seen him. Peace will find you when you seek him. In the meantime, I'm praying for you. You're a legend. Hope to see you in heaven, Lauren. You ain't been the same since back then, I know. You kinda changed back when I was in the back thinking, let the track spin. Let the track spin, singing.